Like it's 6:30. Okay, hello, good evening. I'm Barbara Hermanson, and we are now convening the September 2016 edition of our Writers Advisory Council meeting. Call to order. I just want to take a brief moment to talk about the agenda. As we often do when we have a speaker, we'll do that first, and then we will take public comment after that. We know we have some public commenters signed up tonight. And we will also, though, have a small public comment time available at the conclusion of his time before the official public comment on any topic, just specifically regarding his. So we'll talk more about the agenda later. So I'd like to once again introduce Mr. Paul Wiedefeld, our general manager, who's been here so long now. He's just
give you
an opportunity.
9 months it's been. Well, thank you so much. Really, I just wanted to, first and foremost, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. It's good for me. It's good for the, obviously, for the board. And I think just in general, you know, it keeps everyone in tune with other issues, and you're another resource for us. So that's thank you for that. And then I wanted to thank all those that did come out for the drill. I know I saw a lot of you out there. Those are so important to us. I know I spoke to some of you when I was out there. We just learn something every time we do them. And we want to step it up every time we do it and just get better and better. I attended the meeting last night with the Access Committee, and there were some issues there they raised, you know, from their perspective that we want to tighten up. So we'll do that. And again, I know that you all gave your comments, so we appreciate that. And with that, basically, I thought I would just open it up to questions and comments or suggestions. I mean, I can hit anything you want. I don't want to try to assume that you want to hear certain things, so I'll be glad to take any questions.
Okay. So as we usually do, we should mention he does need to be out of here by 7, so that's our firm stop. So,
because I'm back in here all day tomorrow.
This Jack Rue. I'll be here with you. I'll be here in the evening, too, for committee meetings. We'll go around the table, and I'll just wait to see who has questions first. You know, we do a little bit of first come, first serve, but please remember, we'll start with one question each so we can be sure to get to everybody, because sometimes, even though the question may be quick, you know, the response that's appropriate is not so quick. So anyone that wants to start the questions. Oh, and I've given him the, I'd like to give you the permission to, if they ask you something that's already in the CARE report that just came out a few days ago for August, you know, about that, where does something stand, please feel free to just direct us to that.
Sure.
In general, so that we can help us, you know, get more accustomed to it. So, questions? Okay, Sitsa won the hit the buzzer first. Go ahead, Sitsa.
Hi, Mr. Wiedefeld. Sitsa Gofard. Thanks again for coming. I wanted to ask you about the topic of the possible permanent midnight closure of the Metro Rail system. It's something that's, I think, been on everyone's mind lately. I think there's been a big sort of debate, at least in our minds, over how many hours we need for extra maintenance work on the system versus trying to balance, you know, the need to serve our communities and make sure that we don't disrupt late night commuters or people who, you know, really depend on the system late at night. And to get a sense of kind of what, you know, I saw this morning there are a variety of options out there that, you know, have all these different, you know, proposed closure hours and when the system's going to run. How many hours in your mind do you think we need of extra maintenance time?
Sure.
And sort of how, what's your vision for, you know, trying to balance the need for more maintenance work with, you know, the need to serve our community?
Sure. I think where we are now, the stage that we're in now, we need significant more time. And it's what I'm looking for is basic preventive maintenance and inspection. Because right now, what we do, we try to do maintenance inspection, particularly inspection during revenue service hours, which is very tight and both dangerous and not very efficient. And it's not efficient and it's not at the quality that I want it to be. And to be frank, that's where we've had some of the track issues we've even had. So we need to give the people that inspect more time to do it and do it right and do it thoroughly. So that's part of the pressure there. And then just ongoing preventive maintenance. And think of it, I know we're focused a lot on track now because of Safe Track, But literally, I'm talking, you know, soup to nuts here. We're talking everything from drainage to ventilation fans to tunnel lighting to trash removal, you know, in the tunnels to repairing. Literally, we have concrete that deteriorates in the tunnels. A whole host of things that we just don't get to at the level that we need to get to. Everything on the power side, for instance, that we've, you know, we, as you know, we've had a lot of issues on power. A lot of that's due to, again, basic inspection and maintenance and doing that. So I think until we get out of that and get it to a state where we can say we're comfortable now, that we know what we've got in our hands and we have it under control, we are not there. And the safe track is, you know, one part of it that we're trying to get to. And that was, a matter of urgent need that led to that. But to deal with, you know, the system-wide issues that we have, and to be quite frank, one of the reasons why we're at the condition we're in is because we haven't put the time in. It's been repeated, you know, several times by FTA. So, you know, what that balance is, it's something that we should discuss. But the 8 hours that we're talking about gives us over 20% more time. It's relatively on the shoulders of the operation. Yes, it impacts people and impacts some people more, for sure. We want to look at additional bus service to try to capture some of that. What I can say, though, is regardless of where that lands, we are going to do the work. We're not going to push that off any longer. So what that does mean is that we'll then have to impact other times of the day because it's going to be done. I'm not going to back off of that because we can't back off of that any longer.
Thank you. Valerie.
So from very big to very little, I work in an office, one of my colleagues works in Largo, and she's now gotten to calling it your WMATA, your WMATA. So this is
heard that before.
I've heard that.
So
I've heard that all the time.
It's a shared experience for us. What she said is that in Largo, there are special events, I guess the FedEx field or something, people park there. And the people who have regular parking don't get notice when there's special event parking. So when they leave at night, they have to pay $15 rather than their regular $470, whatever. And I guess part of the problem is you may not carry a purse, but some people who carry a purse put it in the trunk, or it's like their card that has the parking stuff is locked away. And so lots of people are backing up. And so she requested that I fix the WMATA to have better signage during special events. Signage in the morning, so when you go in, you know this is going to happen, so you can be prepared. And then she also said that my WMATA was not doing enough having police ticket folks for parking in reserve places. She said, we're missing out on a bunch of money there. So Largo parking lot has a lot of people who are improperly parking. So if you could follow up.
I will. I'll follow up
to
this.
Thank you.
I wasn't aware of those issues.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that before.
Well, you just need to have a coworker who lives in the area.
I heard about other
stuff. Does she have a smart card and she goes in and out with
She has a smart card, but she has a smart card she uses for her parking, which is different than the smart card she uses for her Metro trip, because, you know, the federal folks won't pay you for parking if you're using. That's why she has two cards.
So it's not showing that she's going through the system, which would then tell her, okay, you can get out at the other price.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And maybe there's a way to get around that on the other end, though, too.
Well, and if she knew in the morning when she got there, she would keep that card out, but she didn't know. Yeah. So.
Okay, Joe.
Hi, Mr. Woodfield. Thanks for being here and joining us and everyone. WMATA Wi-Fi is here, and it's working like a charm, at least for the six stations that I've been able to see it in. And I was wondering, what are some of the plans to maybe extend or expand that service? I know it's a small pilot, and we're being strategic and smart about how that might or might not be scaled, but Where do you see 3G or 4G access or LTE access in trains? Because I know that's also a safety concern, not being able to report things immediately when you see things, if there's a package that's left. Like, how can we make it so that it's more instantaneous, the feedback that we get, to improve both customer service and also safety concerns? I'm just wondering what that timeline looks like, if there is one. So.
Yeah, I don't have an exact timeline for you, but everything I'm learning from the pilot so far is excellent. So we'll want to pursue that, you know, fairly quickly. So I think it's a 45-day pilot, if I remember. So we'll take a hard look at it, but you know, everything I'm getting is very positive. In terms of the connectivity in the tunnels, you know, that's the other issue. It also gets to the same issue of time. To do that project, I mean, right now it's going to take us 4 years to do. There's two elements that we're doing right now. We're doing a complete radio system because we have to. We have to upgrade our radio system, and then we're doing the cell phone coverage. The radio system takes roughly 4 years just because you can't turn that on in piecemeal. It has to be all. You have to have the redundant system totally in place, and to physically do that. So what we're doing is we're laying the cable for the cell phone and the radio at the same time, and we get a segment of tunnel done, we can turn that on. Or we can't, but the companies can. So we'll turn it over to them. So that'll come in piecemeal. Later this year, we'll come out with a schedule of what that is. We've done quite a bit of work on that, and then the goal is to get that up as quick as we can. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Will.
Yes, sir.
You said that too quiet to go over the loudspeaker, but I think I heard you.
Sometimes no. I get asked what keeps you up at night. I said, what hour?
Right. No. Well, all right. So, everybody else that's here generally they're going to ask you all of the technical questions and the innards and outers of you know how the system is going to be fixed or whatnot. But I go down different paths sometimes. So I'm curious, when you come into the office, what's your process? I mean, what do you look at first? You know, what are you looking at as far as, you know, reports or people or, you know, what's your general daily routine like?
Mm-hmm. You know, it starts actually on the system. I get a pulse of that. And then literally it's usually focusing around getting different parts of the organization together. We have just a packed full agenda of things we're trying to do. And it's getting people to understand, you know, the bigger picture in some of this stuff, because we're a lot of people that work hard, but sometimes they, you know, need to step back a little bit. So I feel that's part of my job, is to get them to do that and then challenge them to think strategically about stuff. So that's a big part of the day. And the reality is, you know, with a lot of moving parts, a lot of things change during the day. So it changes quite a bit, and we adjust, unfortunately, on the fly sometimes, but we're pretty good at some things, you know, when they happen, we know what we're doing. Takes time, it takes much more time than I ever want to resolve some of these issues. We had an issue today out by Addison Road, actually, where a cable and a utility box fell from the ceiling. It you know got into the envelope that we you know you can't operate in, and it took us almost 6 hours to get to it because physically to get to that height and everything, get the equipment in and do all that, and so you're shutting down power, you're doing all that, and I'm sorry I keep harping on this, but that is another inspection thing that should be done constantly, you know, so maybe it catches it up or maybe it doesn't, but I know we can reduce those things from happening. So now we're thinking, all right, now do we have to redesign that hole? You know, why do we have the box up here and the cable down here? Why not have the cable, the box down here and the cable up there? So every day changes like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Colin.
Thank you. So it's no secret that the system has been losing riders, and according to the most recent report, it continues to lose riders. And, you know, surveys and research indicate that the two things that customers want are reliable and timely service. But looking at the Vital Signs report, The blue line, it, you know, continues to be the most crowded line on the system, basically every month since the Silver Line opened. And according to the new customer rail on-time performance metric, it has the lowest customer rail on-time performance. So, you know, I know I think I asked you this the last time you were here, but it seems like a clear area where, you know, some small adjustment for the blue line could potentially significantly, you know, improve those metrics and you know, stem some of that rider loss. So, you know, I ask again, is there any effort or planning underway to you know, rebalance the blue line?
All right. If I could just address the drop in ridership in general first, then I'll get to you specific. Again, there's a lot going on in the dynamic of ridership. SafeTrak obviously isn't helping us. You're right, reliability and on-time performance, but I also think safety also has hurt us a bit. Demographics have changed for sure. The business environment with the federal government, you know, all those factors are playing into this. So I think it is complicated. And then to that specific, I think that we need to take, you know, on a semi-regular basis, like we do on the bus system, for instance, every year we do a sort of rebalance it if possible with no budget implications. We do that every fall. It may be something that it doesn't make sense maybe to do it every year, but maybe it's something we should do on a more regular basis with the rail system across the board, and not only on, we may want to look at headways, we may look at a lot of things, right? And because it doesn't make as much sense to do some of these things that we do. And I'm not sure we've done that as a system for quite a while that I'm aware of, you may be aware of. Obviously, with the Silver Line, they did. But just as an ongoing management perspective, maybe we should be doing that, and that would get at that particular issue. So I am going to start to move in that direction. Just so you know, one part of the issues right now on the Blue Line is actually we have less cars right now, and it's hurting it as well.
Okay. And if I can just piggyback on that, because, you know, Colin and I, you know, tag team on Blue Line stuff. We know there are limitations, you know, with Roslyn and the tunnel and all of that, and we know that only so many cars can go through. But even what has seemed to us, we don't know all the facts, but it seems that what's easier than getting more trains through the tunnel is getting more occasional eight lines on the blue, because that also alleviates significant amount of the crowding. Yeah. So that's one of the things that we've been really.
And as you saw, that is moving in the direction we wanted to with the larger order of Kawasaki's, the 7,000.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that sooner.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Christine.
Thank you and good evening, and thank you for taking the time to spend with us again. And just to start off, thank you also for attending the quarterly drill. I think that shows such great leadership, not only to the riders, but also to your employees, and I think that it's greatly appreciated. The question I wanted to go with is, I was gonna talk about the ridership, but as you probably know, we started a new safety subcommittee, and we've had one meeting as a group and one meeting prior to that setting up the logistics. In our group, in its infancy, we started with brainstorming and then prioritizing what we feel is most important. One of the conversations was along the lines of, okay, for safety, do we go with operations or do we also look at customer rider safety, which would also tie in with the customer service subcommittee. All that being said, a concern since our last meeting and now that I have this opportunity with this being, or next year being an inauguration, are there plans on what Metro is going to do and how they're going to handle the crowds of people coming in for the inauguration and with the track work? and for the track work, et cetera. So we don't have much time with the remainder of 2016, and with that, of course, in January of 2017, I wanted to know what I should take to the next safety subcommittee meeting.
Sure. Just to give you a sense of perspective, we started booking rooms probably about 8 months ago, because literally we have to board people. I recently sent a letter to all the other transit just about all the other major transit properties in the country, asking for police resources, and we'll be getting a number of those. So we have a whole playbook for the NAR world that we've been working with. And so that's well underway, and it's not just us. It's everything from the Joint Terrorism Task Force to local governments, everyone that gets involved. So I think we're in good shape for that. Again, we've done it a number of times, and we learn every year. And then we have scheduled the safe track around it. We actually have a gap for that. We built that in, knowing that would be such a big event. It may even be bigger than we all think. So we'll see how that all goes. But we meet, literally, we have a group that's meeting just about daily on that now.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And if you need, as that goes along, if you have another meeting before then, which you will, I'm sorry, if you want the chief or somebody to stop by, or Lynn Bowersack, you know, they've been orchestrating that from our perspective.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Great. Bob? Sorry.
I understand that infrastructure and safety are your top priority. I hope the customer service is a close second. Could you tell me what specific things you're doing to improve customer service, and what kind of metrics you're using to measure mm-hmm. any kind of improvement in customer service?
Sure. Hopefully, I mean, the things you're seeing, like, for instance, the tap in, tap out, the Wi-Fi example, I forget what the official name is, but the purple people that we have at some of our stations that help the platform monitors basically what they are. The MVP program that we started, which is, customers that are willing to volunteer. And those are just, some of the specific things. At a larger scale, though, is working directly with frontline employees, particularly station managers, bus operators, and train operators, to get them to understand, that that's what we're here for, is for the customer, that's who pays our salaries. That's our mission. So I think it's a combination of some specific things that we're doing, and then we do report them in the CARE report, a number of those things that we're doing. Signage, everything from the six-car train stops here, is one of the things we put in. Lighting, I want to do more in lighting, which is, customer related. We'll be finishing up the mezzanines this year, and then we got to get into the platforms, and that's a very complex one. So a series of them.
Yeah, what prompts my question is, once again today, I showed up at my station at rush hour, and the station manager was barricaded in his in the kiosk.
Station was that?
White Flint. Yeah, White Flint.
Okay. And what time was that?
It was 5:15.
Okay.
Yeah. I should also add that it took me approximately 2 months of contacting people and speaking to station managers to get pieces of steel removed from the roadbed and a cover for the third rail on the northbound section of the train. Of the rail line in the White Flint station. Nobody was interested. It finally got taken care of, but I'm concerned that that really your folk, my view is, personally, is you need to be focused on your employees. I mean, really focused on your employees and focused on the people who are supervising them.
I agree. Just so you know, a few things on that front. A, the policy is that they're to be out of the kiosk at rush hour, so I will follow up on that particular case. In terms of cover boards, and again, I hate to do this, but literally, if you looked at the track inspection report that the FTA just published, about a month ago, they noted that we had almost 18,000 outstanding work orders. And what happens is, because of the time, cover boards is a lower priority than getting to some of the other things. And that's the reality. And so it's not a secret. You look at any part of our system, you will see cover boards missing. They shouldn't be missing. But it takes time to do it. you're taking down track time to do it, and that's what it requires. But given the compression of time, that tends to fall to the bottom. And that we can't do that. you know, we have to start to attack those. In terms of the front line I've talked about, but we have been very clear to our supervisors what their job is. We've just recently given notice to all of our non-labor union employees, non-represented employees, that they are at-will employees, that they are to be held accountable. I bet now with every non-representative employee, we had a meeting just recently at the Verizon Center with the remainder, so all almost 2,000 people I've spoken to directly, so they understand, you know, what we're doing and what's expected of them, good and bad. And so it's not going to happen overnight, but it's definitely in moving in that direction.
I'll just take it out of your hands. I'm taking it out of your hands.
It's yours.
I know. Do we have a member of the public that wanted to ask a question regarding this? I know we have more here, but I'm just saying, do we have any member of the public that wanted to ask a question here? Ken, is that you back there? Ken, you need to have a mic, so I wonder if... I think he's got one. He's using Patrick's there.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But you need the mic over. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Kenneth Mitchell. I just had a question. I saw that they had an expanded Select Pass price point, but there wasn't an option, or they didn't expand it to the bus add-on section of those expanded lists. And then one other, I guess two quick other questions.
No. You're okay, stuck with our one question.
That's my
I'm
main
sorry.
Question.
You I come here it. Too much to not know that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, that is a bit of a pilot program still. So again, it's going to be expanded as you know we get more results. I can't give you a date yet, but we'll follow up with the committee to let you know as it evolves. But again, I think it's been received very well, and I think the more we expand that, the better. Same way with the U-Pass, the same thing. You know, we started that out at American, but the goal here is let's keep doing things like that.
Okay, back to Thaddeus then.
Good evening. Metro now has an RFP out about privatizing parking, and if and when that happens, will Metro have some say over if parking fees are raised, by how much, and will they cause a redistribution of employees?
Yeah. Actually, employees is relatively small in the parking arena, but we have to address that if particularly they're unionized employees, we have to address that. It is, there will be caps on the parking, and it'll be a board decision when those get raised, just as it is today. So I don't see that changing. And we're not sure, you know, how that'll play out. You know, we left it, I don't know if you've got into the details of it, we left it open. We want to see what the market says, and we'll see if it makes sense. But I just thought it was something we should explore. We got almost 60,000 parking spaces. And, you know, it's important, but it's not the core of our business. Is there other ways to do that so we can focus on other things? And that's really just the rationale behind it. And we'll see what it brings. And if it is even more efficient, better customer service, whatever, let's analyze it. But let's see what the market shows us.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
James.
I'm Jim Zepp. I'm from Montgomery County. And I wanted to start by, again, complimenting you on your commitment to change, because I spent a number of years in program evaluation, and I know how difficult it is to do change institutionally ingrained practices and personalities, and it's not an easy task. What I wanted to do was raise an idea with you, that in the sort of transportation traffic demand field, most of the attention as far as economic remedies have focused on congestion pricing, making it more expensive to travel in downtown areas in rush hour, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Palo Alto, California did a different thing on this because where Stanford University is, they are a major generator of congestion for that community. And so what they did, an experiment where they registered about 5,000 people, and so when traffic conditions were congested, they would get like a text message would say, well, if you don't drive right now, you get a dollar. Or if you're a gambling man, you can be entered into a lottery for Sugar Bowl tickets. And they were surprised to find that for very small incentives, mm-hmm. people were willing to change their travel choices and modes, and so for doing these little things, they were able to reduce congestion by 9 to 20%, which is fairly significant. my county, I know, county government's interested in spending billions of dollars on new transit projects in the belief that this will reduce congestion. One of the things is, since we do have WMATA and its existing services, why instead don't we offer a bounty that says that if you take transit during rush hour, Montgomery County picks up a buck? And
James, I'm sorry, we have only 1 minute left before he has to leave, so do you have a question of him, or was that just kind of...
Well, that's this idea that perhaps one of the arrangements with the local jurisdictions might be this proposal of having some kind of a system to incentivize using transit during prime time hours.
Okay. I mean, I'm not aware of that. I hadn't read about that one, but let me... I'll raise it with you know, with JCC, you know, which is the local governments that we meet with, you know, the technical people, and let's see if they want to pursue it any fashion. It's, it'd be their budget, so.
But it's cheaper than spending billions on new projects.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you. And the last one, yeah, Clarence.
So, this is just sort of asking you to give a quick statement on this one. From my experience this weekend, where which I was going out with a friend in Shaw, and he lived at the Rhode Island Avenue stop, like literally across the street from the metro, and I recently moved down to the NoMa stop, and he lost his phone, so he didn't have his to call an Uber, and he'd never taken the metro before, and he was sort of like, how do I get from one place to one place? I was like, but what are you talking about? Like, you can go to Fort Totten, go to Shaw, whatever else. And I'm surprised by a lot of my friends who just, like, never use the metro, and it seems very foreign to them. So my question to you is, if you had to sort of give the elevator pitch to someone who's recently moved in the city, why should you use the metro? Why should you use WMATA? What would it be?
Why would you drive?
Yay. I like that.
That's great. That is great. I heard that there was another member of the public that was trying to raise their hand, and I just didn't see it earlier. So, oh, yeah, you need to come to a mic. You can come right here if you want. You come right here. It looks like we have. Okay, fine. There's two.
Hi, my name is Yasmina, and I'm asking this question on behalf of workers in the food and retail industries. How long do we plan on having the trains close at midnight? Is there any plan to extend hours in the future? We would like to see 24-hour access, sure, because many of us work late-night shifts. We work overnight shifts. We can't get home.
Right, right. No, it's complicated. I mean, it's for some people, they had no other option. I understand that. But we have to balance it against what the needs are to make sure the system's safe and that we maintain it. So that's what we're trying to find, what's the right balance. The hours that we've been using, closing down at 12 and opening at 5 a.m. on weekdays, gives us roughly about 2.5 hours of work time, because if we're doing any work, it takes us an hour plus to set up, an hour plus to tear down. So just to do that. So we've seen the results of that over 40 years, what that's led to, and so we have to address it. So that's why I think we need to consider getting more hours time. I understand, you know, what you're talking about, but it's a challenge with our system that I just don't know how to overcome. Literally, we cannot overcome it. By just running trains, we just can't do that. There's just not enough time in the day to do all the maintenance that we have to do, much less the inspections.
Okay. Thank you. And if you have any closing comments you'd like to make, I know I appreciate that you're coming here again and giving us so much of your time just to ask any question that we might have in our minds.
No, I really do appreciate it, and I think I committed to quarterly. I want to try to come in quarterly and make sure.
Something like that.
Again, it's for me, it's another avenue to, you know, to hear from people, and obviously you're very well versed, you know, you understand the system and the pluses and minuses and what we're up against. So thank you for your time.
Oh,
okay,
thank you
so much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take us back to official agreement to the agenda. So unless I hear any objection, I'm going to consider the agenda approved. No objections? Thank you very much. Okay, now we have the formal public comment period. The person who has our list has just left the room.
Okay, and she wrote the number
So we do have our first speaker is Yasmina, I'm not sure how to say it, Mirabet? Mirabet. Okay, got it. If you would come up in here to the end of the table. Jeffrey, you, oh, he's just there. He's just gone for a minute. Yeah, right where Paul was sitting. Exactly. And you do, as you know, have 2 minutes. I don't, the timer isn't going, so we're going to trust you on that.
Okay.
I don't know how to do that part.
Okay. My name is Yasmina Mirabet. I'm an organizer with Project Retail, and we represent the interests of people working in the retail and food industries in and around Washington, D.C. We're here to express our strong concerns with the lack of affordable access to public transportation for low and no-income people. In other major cities like New York, they seem to be able to have one flat rate. They also seem to be able to maintain their trains while offering people 24-hour access. In D.C., the further you travel, the more you pay. And as we know, because of the rapid gentrification that is continuing in this city, impoverished communities, especially communities of color, are being pushed to the outskirts of the city and to areas outside of the city, and therefore have to travel further to access their jobs and to access new job opportunities. So we have a situation where the people who work in our industries who are making the least money are paying the highest fares. And in moving toward one flat rate, we would like to see the elimination of peak fares. There is no good reason for us to pay more money during certain hours of the day, particularly when it is in those hours that we have to wait for multiple trains to go by before we squeeze our way onto an overcrowded train, only to arrive at our destinations late due to the generally unreliable metro services for whatever other reasons, whatever safety issues that are now being addressed after 40 years of going unaddressed. Finally, we would like to emphasize our opposition to any and all attempts to privatize the public transportation system. We understand that privatizing the public transportation system will serve only to generate wealth and profit for private companies, while the people with the least means will continue to suffer even further hardships. Public transportation should remain public, and it should be made affordable for everyone, regardless of race or economic status, and that is not the case right now. We expect the Riders Advisory Council to take our input seriously in your recommendations to the WMATA Board of Directors. We retail and food workers, we are the backbone of this economy. We rely heavily on public transportation to get to and from work, and right now we're unable to access it. We're having a lot of difficulty accessing it. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Brian Jeter? Okay, your turn next.
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Brian Jeter. I am representing myself, my family, and friends who ride Metro daily because they don't have a car. I represent my cohorts over here in the corner. I represent Project Retail. I am the voice for people who are riding the Metro trains and the train and the buses. I came today to speak on behalf of everybody for the Metro increasingly rates. I believe that we should have flat rates. Nothing to fluctuate because I spend at least one-third of my paycheck on transportation. The two-thirds goes towards bills and necessities that I might need, you know, for my household. So then that's, you know, I just, you know, feel as though that everybody deserves to have, you know, one flat rate. Everybody uses the train to travel the city. They have family that lives not only in D.C. but in Maryland and Virginia, and the trains stretch out there. But we can't access, you know, our family and friends because the rates are so high. I worked at Target in Columbia Heights, and it cost me $4.50 to take the train from Bennett Road to Columbia Heights. In total, that's $8, and I added it up. I would spend almost $160 a month just to ride the train. And I don't feel as though I get the services, you know, in time. And I get late to my destinations. We get faulted for it. You know, there are penalties for when the Metro is late for us. So I'm speaking on behalf of everybody. This is what we would like to see. It'll be in your best interest because ridership has gone down. I know people that use Uber instead of Metro. I try to get my friends to use Metro. They don't come out. So there are kind of like downfalls to our personal lives because of Metro. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Michael Sampson. Is that right? I wasn't sure. Is that the right name? Michael Sampson. Did I get it right?
Thank you, and I'll keep it short. My name is Michael Sampson. I've been in the district for about 2 years. We are, our group name is Project Retail. We are an organization of people here in DC who work for a living, who are trying to raise the standards for everyone in the district as well. I come to you today basically to implore you to basically take action. Right now, there's a rising cost to metro fares. There's an inconvenience that workers face every day when they have to work a certain shift going past 10 or 11 o'clock and they can't catch the train. A lot of folks in the district, for example, do not have the means, let's say, to buy a car, to Uber. A lot of folks don't have the access to that technology to use a Lyft or an Uber. So the fact that they have to work a shift 2 to 11 at an already horrible job, you know, like the folks that we that in our organization work sometimes have the worst sort of management and wages. They still have to work to provide for their loved ones. And the fact that they can't get home sometimes until hours, can't get home on time and stuff like that, or can't catch the train, I think that's a problem that we're here to address. The main thing is we feel as though I can recall myself, you know, like, for example, I lived in Ward 5 for when I first moved to D.C. Now I live in Maryland because it's much cheaper, and I would catch the bus and then catch the bus to Benning and then catch Benning to where I live at, and that would cost me around $10 a day. And imagine that for a work week. That's like a lot. And if I'm not getting paid a lot as well, I can recall a quarter of my check sometimes going to pay for Metro. And I think in a city as big as the district, we have a lot of so-called like investment coming to the district. A lot of money is getting poured into the district. Why is it that working people in the district have to face the brunt of rising Metro costs? Working people in the district have to face the brunt of Metro being late, being slow, and having issues that should have been addressed by Ramada years ago, but are just getting addressed now. So
we need to wrap up as soon as
you can. Yes, ma'am. So we're here basically calling for one flat rate. We're calling for longer, a 24-hour metro, as well as we're calling for an end to, I know like a lot of times folks feel a lack of a security on the trains, and they feel as though the best way to remedy that is by adding more cops. But imagine what that does to folks in the Southeast or African-American people who see more police on the train. So how am I supposed to work a crappy job here, then ride the train and see two cops in front of me looking me up and down? That creates like a criminalization of black and brown people in this city that we shouldn't have. So I thank you for giving me the time to speak here, and I implore you to take action.
Thank you. And I have to confess that when I sat here and said, well, I guess you'll all be on your honor system, I had three people over here pulled out their cell phones and were timing everybody, unbeknownst to me. So thank you. We now have Raheem Anthon. Is that right? The clock's going to start when you start.
Good evening. I'm Raheem Anthon. I am here today speaking on behalf of the working community in D.C. I work at T-Mobile, so that's my occupation. I'm here actually to add on behalf of the flat rate. So I've come here today to propose the issuing of one flat affordable rate that would not only increase the ridership amongst Washingtonians, but would benefit the working people of D.C. as a whole. WMATA has not appropriately addressed the issues of making a fair rate for the struggling class of the city, yet WMATA has only shown favor in profiteering off of the newly acquired growth in population growth. Housing in DC is requiring 18% of the district's struggling population to at least double their annual income in order to survive and remain in the city. As a public service entity, WMATA needs to respond not only to making transportation reliable, but affordable. I cannot stress enough the urgency of public support that is needed within the low-income community of the city. Providing an affordable rate would take some of the burden of the working class citizens. How can you explain the decrease in the decent paying jobs paired with the hike in metro pricing? How is this supposed to encourage struggling workers in the city? And how can you say that public transit has no foothold in stagnating the poor? This is clear evidence that not only are you disenfranchising the natives of this community, but showing little interest in aiding the people who have paid into the service since it opened to the public. An affordable flat rate will encourage and motivate habitual ridership amongst the working class people. This will also provide employment opportunities to workers that can commute from one end of the line to another without being burdened of the high cost. Not to mention workers' schedules in food service and retail industries vary on a weekly basis. Therefore, needing to budget their transportation needs with the uncertainty of peak and off-peak hours or pricing.
I do need to wrap up as soon as you can.
Okay.
Thank you.
And workers in DC urgently need for their public transit service to work for them, not against them. Our public service industry's duty is to help encourage growth in the communities as well as providing longevity instead of marginalizing and enforcing us out. I do hope that you do take this proposal into the next budgeting conference, as I do feel it would be a true disservice to the DC community as a whole. Thank you
very much. And is it Tamia Small? Tamia. Okay, well, I got the right consonants and vowels. I got Small right?
Yes.
Thank you.
You did it perfectly. I don't like it when they use plural. You did it perfectly. All right. So my name is Tamia Small, and I'm speaking on behalf of Project Retail about police harassment. Looking at the Smart Trip that I have in my hand, I think about the hundreds and thousands of people that tap their card, and they rely on your services on an everyday basis, such as myself, but then you also have the customers like myself that are not able to afford Metro on an everyday basis. But not only are we paying a crime of, you know, being in poverty, we're also being harassed by the police, such as a young man that I saw at Pentagon Station City. Actually, he was on his way to an interview, and he did not get there in time, nor did he get the job, because the police harassed him because he was in such a rush, he walked through the gates right behind another customer. An honest mistake that some of us actually make on an everyday basis. They took 20 minutes to handcuff him and embarrass him, strip away his dignity as they do on an everyday basis. And some of you look away, but it's something that happens every day. It's a reoccurring issue that I do not approve of, and neither do the other people. It's not just a personal opinion. It's something that thousands of people see every day. I can't find anything like that on Google or anything like that. So I find it amazing how you all could hide, you know, something that happens about like 50 times a day. I just thought that it was so awesome and funny at the same time. I also just want to say that ticketing, we do not want to be ticketed 16 to 30 times more than the train fare or bus fare. I do not think that is fair. We already cannot afford these high-rated prices just to get from point A to point B, let alone be uncomfortable while doing that. And I'm going to wrap up in a second. Also being uncomfortable about doing that, we feel that you should take away the police brutality or take away the police
officers that are in transit. You need to teach them how to be a little bit more, you need to teach them how to take care of our pride, our dignity. Treat us as if they were to treat each other. That is a huge issue, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other public speaker that did not sign up that wanted to speak? Okay, I do want to have a follow-up comment to the five of you, not just to any one of you. We really do appreciate your being here. We don't interact necessarily. We want to give you the time to just to speak your mind on what you're concerned about. As luck would have it, tonight is the night we're going to be talking a lot in the remaining hour of this meeting about the budget proposals and recommendations that we have for next year. So it's very timely to hear from you about fares and your point of view. I think there are a lot of people that would find a flat fare system so much simpler, not only more affordable, but just simpler for the whole world. I will not defend or attack that approach. We do know that there are some differences, a different environment here for WMATA than there are for other cities such as New York, in that most of the major cities have funding that's dedicated to them, whether it's a tax percent or something, that funds it to enable them to do flat fares, and most other transits have a single jurisdiction that's kind of, you know, governing them as opposed to D.C., Virginia, and Maryland. So there's some complexities here that don't always exist there, but that doesn't mean it's something we can or can't do. It's just that there's some realities that in this environment. If any of you have what you said is written testimony, if you already have it prepared and you want to give it to us, we'd be happy to take that. If you just had your own notes and that, you know, doesn't work for you, that's fine too. But if you do have something in writing that you want to give us tonight or send in to us later, I'm sure you have our address because I know you had contacted Joy in advance tonight. So is there anyone else here that's dying to make a comment in response? Colin, you win. You get it.
So I want to echo Barbara in thanking you all for coming out. Your points are well taken. This isn't the first time that the issue of fare inequity has come up. I think we commented on it briefly the last time. And we will be looking into, you know, different fare options. I think many of us also agree that peak fares are a problem. I think it's also, you know, worth emphasizing the point that, you know, WMATA is in a fairly unique position in that, you know, while it takes most, a significant portion of its revenues from fares and more so than any other transit system in the country, it is still facing enormous budget shortfalls. So it is in no way profiting, but you know, we do need to figure this out. And so I would, you know, in addition to continuing to push us as representatives of the riders, I would also encourage you to reach out to the Chambers of Commerce, whose businesses, many of whom you may work for, also are likely to suffer as a result of continued, you know, rider losses. But also, you know, the local jurisdictions who contribute funding to WMATA and, you know, upon which the system relies for its ability to be flexible with fares. So, you know, if you haven't already reached out to local jurisdictions and made these points, please do so, because they need as much pressure as possible to increase the funding that is provided that would allow for, you know, a greater flexibility in budgeting for a public system.
And if I can add to that, one of the things I meant to say also is that any time there's a significant change in service or in fares, there will be public input process, extensive public input, not just a hearing where you can come down in person downtown and come and talk about your feelings about fares, but you can also do it via online surveys, via email, via all sorts of ways. So both any change in the late night service and any change in the fares would always go through that process. And so you will have that opportunity to do that too. And I encourage you to take advantage of it because you will be heard. It is not just a formality. It is, you will be heard by the board, whether they're present in the room or if they get it all and they consider it all. Now, we are facing, I just want to say that tonight we are going to come up with a recommendation on the budget. And we are going to stay here until we have that. So any of you that want to speak now about to those people, I will let you do that. But just keep in mind, keep it really brief, okay? Because we don't normally do our comments to the public comments. We accept the public comments. But so, Christine.
Thank you, and I'll be quick. However, for one, I'd like to echo Colin's comments by reaching out to the local businesses, which may be suffering as well as your own experience. And I'd like to say it's not limited to certain areas. For example, leaving this meeting after working all day and later in the evening, it takes a significant amount of time to get home because of the transportation to where I live as well. So it's not isolated. And I see a theme here in earlier what James had mentioned, that maybe if there wasn't, maybe if it was a flat rate, maybe people would travel at different times, maybe when it wasn't so busy and they didn't have to worry about, that could ultimately be a big solution to the problem. So thank you for your comments.
Sita.
Yeah, I also wanted to thank you and ask, first of all, what's the best, so we're actually in the process of, we'll be writing a letter to the board, clarifying the RAC's kind of views and opinions on the proposed midnight closures. You know, we don't know how long that, if that's going to happen, how long. But we're looking for, you know, as much public input as we can in that letter. What's the best way to kind of contact you for, if we were to, have
we
some.
We have your email, so would it be yours?
Okay.
Is that it, Sita?
Okay. And I guess a second quick question. If we were to eventually propose a flat fare to the WMATA board and say this is kind of what we're behind, is there sort of, what do you feel is an appropriate, fair level? Obviously, we want to keep it as low as we can, riders and benefits. But for, working families across cities, sort of what do you think is a digestible sort of fair level that would be a reasonable ask? Given, in comparison to other cities out there, I mean.
Or you can email it.
Yeah, or you can email us. I'm just curious as to kind of what.
No mention of bus service.
We would say to do a survey or
sure. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. One.
Right, yeah. Okay, no, that's good. That's good. That's good to know. That's good to know. Okay. No,
Thank you. Okay. Joe.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just heard some of your concerns earlier before the meeting started, and I'd just like to thank you for your inspiring advocacy for your communities and even coming out here during this time. I'd like to piggyback on what you just said about polling and how many people you represent and what sorts of data back up some of your conclusions, because I think the conclusions make a lot of sense on what you said, but I'd like to see more robust data supporting your claims to ensure that your community actually does want a flat rate or some of these other things, definitely making sure that it's more accessible and that we're not closing the trains at midnight and things like that, but I'm sure you guys do. I'm just not knowledgeable. I'm sure there's more information on your websites and things, so I'm just not knowledgeable, so apologize if that's the issue, but. Yeah, for sure. That's why I said I love your advocacy, and definitely it's not just your communities, but communities that we are all a part of, that this is WMATA, this is all of our transit, and so this affects everyone, and that we're all interconnected. So definitely, I share your concerns deeply, but in terms of, I guess, the communities of, like, retail or, the specific demographics, like, I'm wondering what polling or data you guys have done so far to back up some of your specific policy recommendations and things like that. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you once again for being here.
Ken.
I guess echoing what Colin said and others, I do appreciate you guys' advocacy. For a guy who's attended a lot of these meetings and very few people show up, it is nice to actually have more public input. And like others have said, I think, yes, you do have to make sure you try to push the either business community or push your other, the either jurisdictions that you live in, like the, you know, your represented officials and everything, to push Ramada and also attend these meetings, attend the board meeting. You know, it's nice that we have, you know, I'm assuming we have some members of the press here who do show up, but, you know, hopefully these things can get out basically to the public, because a lot of people that can't attend these meetings don't have time to, but we all use WMATA, we're all affected, and I think if some of the, like, your concerns get out there amongst people who may not quite experience it, but they, if they were to experience more of it or at least be informed of it, they'd maybe understand and also could be become your advocates as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And James, okay, you're last, and we need it quick.
All right. I just wanted to note that a number of transit agencies similar to WMATA have faced severe financial difficulties, for example, Cleveland. And one of the problems is that in order to hold fares constant or decrease them, 70% of the budget of the operating costs are personnel. So what that means is either laying off people, hiring freezes, salary and benefit freezes for multiple years in order to be able to keep fares low. So there are these kinds of difficult choices that the agency has to make in terms of how it then treats its labor costs. So.
Thank you all. We're going to proceed now with the remainder of the agenda. You are all the public, just you are free to stay, you are free to go, it's whatever you choose. Okay. Still within the public comment period, I received 5 emails that came through via the RAC comments web, email address in the last month since we met before. Just a quick summary. 3 of them had to do with the late night service that people had, and they were actually very extensive thought out proposals and comments and the basis for why they objected, that sort of thing. And so I have, because that's something that's within our budget recommendations, I forwarded the specifics of those to CITSA, who's been working with me on that. And if any of you want to see that, I'm happy to share them. We had 2 that were very specific bus things where bus was late. So those, I made it clear that they needed to, you know, that was also going to customer service. And that's, we didn't have any information that we could help with those. And then there was 1 that was about the website, which I did forward to Colin, that also was well thought out and very detailed about what I did this should have happened, and this happened, and that was very good. So we had those that came in this month. Approval of the past meeting minutes, you've had those in your packet. One thing I would always say when you get those, check to see if your name's in the right place. Sometimes after the fact, you know, hey, if it says you were present and you were absent or vice versa, you know, you might want to check that part. But as well as anything else to make sure we got it right. But do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
And any discussion? All in favor, say aye. 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 Opposed? Any abstentions? I'm sorry?
I abstain. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorraine. Okay. Thank you very much. Minutes are approved. My chair report will be very short. I'm going to finish the monthly updates when I hear what you guys have to say tonight. There was a special board meeting on August 25th. It was well covered. I mean, it was covered extensively in the media. So probably one of the people in this room covered it. I'm not really sure. Probably Fez did. covered the board meeting, and so I won't go into that, but it was something that was called. The board does not typically meet in August. If you want to see the topics, you can go onto the website. I was not present because I was out of town, so I didn't know we were having a board meeting until I was already scheduled. So that's it for that. On to the committee reports. What we need some significant amount of time, depending on the amount of discussion, is to talk about what we want to recommend to the board for fiscal 2018. You all saw a draft of some ideas last time and had an opportunity to participate in the survey, and so tonight we need to do that. Now, this has already gone around, is that right? It's a two-sided one. So everybody has that here in the, and it's up on, sure. Sisa, would you like to start us out on this? Do I have one here? Wait a minute now. Okay, have at it.
So as you all recall, we had a great discussion last month's RAC meeting about the different fair options, ideas, and models that are out there that we could recommend to the board. Obviously, as you all know, they've expressed a willingness, or at least an openness, to consider different fair models. And since last time, we've been able to, we sent out a little survey among the RAC. I think only 7 people responded, but within those 7, at least we got a little bit of a sense of kind of what the RAC prefers. And at this meeting, we should sort of start trying to form some sort of agreement on, you know, which of these ideas appeals to us most. I'd just like to throw out there that there's no harm in sort of asking or sort of being ambitious with some of these ideas. Ultimately, our suggestions will go to the WMATA board, and they'll take it and they'll study these proposals. And so everything we need to sort of, we should remember, you know, who we're representing, the hundreds of thousands of riders out there, and remember that, you know, there is no harm in, you know, thinking big and, you know, asking for the most and asking for what riders really want. So I guess, Barbara, did you, yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think our guests from Project Retail really wonderfully laid out a lot of the reasons why a flat fare would be desirable for many, many riders. Of course, the flat fare is used across many cities. It's, you know, it's a base fare, $2, $2.50, and, you know, you could ride it across town wherever you needed to go at any hour. Well, we can go into, I guess sort of that's a separate issue. It would obviously be the simplest system. It would also allow for very simple sort of transfers, rail to bus or bus to rail transfers. And you know, specifically, this would really benefit riders who have to commute very far. That can be people who are, as you pointed out, displaced because of patterns of gentrification in the city. It could also be beneficial for, you know, anyone else who really has to commute long distances. Of course, you know, it would involve some fare increases for people who currently commute short distances. And of course, that's something to keep in mind too.
If I could add a little bit about that, you know, as those of you who were here last month, and one of the board members, Malcolm Augustine, was here, and he talked about, you know, the money has to come from somewhere, and there's nothing we're going to do in any proposal that would ever be accepted by the public or by federal guidelines for Title VI and so forth. There's nothing that we'll ever do with fares that's going to cover the expenses of this organization. It's always just going to be a piece of it, and the jurisdictions and other sources are going to have to supply money. But we do a flat fare, unless, so there's a couple of options. If it's a low flat fare that's affordable to everybody, then there's a ton of money that has to come from some other source. If it's a much higher one, then there are people who would be paying more with a flat fare, and I'm sure they are not going to be thrilled about that. So it's just, it's got its pros and cons. But I think that you've done a fine job of explaining that one.
Yeah, and of course, this is not comprehensive. You know, there are, as people have already pointed out by email, you know, there are many pros and cons that we don't even discuss here, and different groups of people in different communities who may be positively or sometimes negatively impacted by each of these models. So that's also something to keep in mind. But yeah, by and large, a flat fare is, just for context, used in, you know, the vast majority of cities in the U.S. and frankly around the world. And it would be the simplest. So if we're aiming for simplicity, that is
right.
Sort of, that's a big pro.
Do you want to also then take on the, oh, no, the next
that's
one.
That one.
I'm going to talk about that one. So this is an idea that still, oh. Sure. You know what? How about if we, can we just put them all out on the table first and then have some discussion? Is that okay? Thank you. So this is one that's kind of a hybrid of what we have versus a zone system, in that distance still pays more, but instead of having this formula that you may not know is so many, it's some base amount plus so much per mile, and it's all these fractions multiplied out very complicated ways so that nobody can figure it out. They just have to look at the chart. That this would be something that there'd be some base fare. Let's just say for discussion, maybe it's $2, or just for discussion. That's not a proposal, it's a discussion point. It's $2, and if you're gonna go five stations, it's five times something that you'd be paying for that. You'd count up your stations that you go, and that would tell you how much it's gonna cost. You're going 10 stations or whatever, but there'd be a ceiling. It's sort of like a zone, that the further you go, the more you pay. It is distance-based, but it's reasonably simple. You know, I've been drawing on my standing at the fare machines on Friday afternoons with customers, and they almost all say, well, it's, oh, we're going to go three stops. They all count it anyway because they want to get off the right place, but it might be simpler for some people. And it doesn't have a drawback of the zone system, as we talked about. If you're at the edge of one zone and you're just going a stop into the next zone, you might have to pay a lot in the zone system, but in this system, you're only going one stop, so it wouldn't have that problem. So that's what that is about. Simple. We know stations aren't all equally spaced. You could either do the same thing all the way out to the end, or maybe the last, let's say each station was 50 cents or 30 cents, whatever, then you make it twice that or something for the last one that's so far out from the others. You know, things like that. These are concepts, not specific numbers.
Yeah.
Go ahead and talk about zone if you want to now.
Sure. Yeah, quickly. So the zone system is kind of the last big fare structure model out there. And it's sort of a hybrid. You know, it's distance-based, but it's still simpler for riders. And you can almost think of it as sort of a flat fare within one zone if you stay within one zone. It would definitely be easy to calculate for riders, and it could be cheaper for some people. It would be a little slightly more expensive for, let's say, somebody who was commuting from, you know, Pentagon to Enfant Plaza, you know, crossing a zone border, crossing a state border, and having to pay that kind of zone difference. And currently, they, you know, their fare is quite cheap. But sort of that's a third model to think about. And these are all just ideas, but we're very curious to hear what everyone thinks and, you know, trying to hopefully come towards some sort of a consensus on.
And what I would like to do first, just first, bear with me. I would just like to just take a kind of a straw poll about, you know, say name the one and then raise your hand if you think that's a good idea. No, I don't know. You can raise your hand more than once. You can raise your hand more than once, but please, you know, raise your hand for the ones you really like versus the ones you don't like so much. I just want to see if there's just, we can just stop talking about one of them because everybody hates it. Yeah, I know. I just thought maybe it would save us some time. Okay. Just how many think that no change is a really good idea?
For just a fair structure.
For the fair structure, not what the dollars attached to it, but the fair structure where it is distance-based, it's based on how many miles out it is and certain.
Is it a bad idea?
Hmm?
No.
Good idea.
It's a good idea.
No change is a good idea.
Status quo.
How many think that, well, but structure-wise, yeah, how. Okay, nobody, if you guys don't want to take a vote, that's fine. Fine. You can abstain if you want, Joe. I don't care. How many think that the structure we have, just because, you know, it's familiar to people and they may not know what all that goes behind it, but they you know, people don't like change sometimes. How many think that that's a good idea, is to keep the system we have? Four of us or something like that. How many think of
five?
And how many think a flat fare is a really good idea that they think has a lot of merit? Well, over there you guys, yeah, right. 4, 5, 6, I don't know. I think I saw about 7 or, I'm just getting rough ideas.
Barbara, can I make a comment really quickly? Can I make a comment really quickly? I didn't realize that this is Denise Clark from Prince George's County. I didn't realize we were going to vote tonight on this fare structure.
We have to turn this in, yes,
okay.
In the next
My
week
vote
or so.
Is for flat fare. There's a reason why, as Sita said, major cities in the states are doing this and around the world. So for me, it doesn't make sense to make this more difficult. So I wholeheartedly vote for a flat fare.
That's fine. Okay. And okay. We'll
and
take comment once
o'clock.
We get the votes. Yeah. We'll take more comment, including. Okay. So how many think this base fare plus fixed price per station, where you count the stops that you take and you add it up that way? Okay. So I'm the only one that think that's a good idea. Oh, hey, I got
vote,
a few more. Yeah, we can vote
I mean,
several times.
I don't
times.
Want it off the table.
Hmm? What? What?
This voting is, I mean, let's continue.
Maybe it's not going to do any good because we're going to get the same number on every one
right.
of them. So that helps me. How many think the zone system is the way to go? That you think is a really good idea. Same as the others. 1, 2, 3. We actually had fewer on that one. Okay. So flat fare is clearly the one that is
Barbara.
Preferred. And I always, okay, that's.
Could I
yeah,
make
yeah, Patrick,
okay,
go ahead.
Thank you. Just as a suggestion, you're looking at bus, you're looking at rail, but no one's talked about Metro Access.
No, we have. No,
so,
and when we started, I think last month, I said that we didn't have it on here because we typically.
I agree.
We just go with you.
Right. Okay, that's fine. So what I would propose that you might be able to put down there is that the Metro Access formula be consistent with what we're paying now. So you'd have a maximum of $7. So you wouldn't have twice the bus and rail, which if you had a flat fare could be 10 bucks or 12 bucks for Metro Access. But you could reduce the multiplier so that it would be some multiplier less than 2, maybe 0.75 or whatever.
Yeah.
But it varies depending upon what the RAC chooses as far as their.
Well, what WMATA takes, you know.
Exactly, right.
Right,
right.
And there's no, there's nothing that says we have to go to the board saying, by golly, we want this model, we want this structure. It can be that we like these two. And they may have all kinds of reasons when they're searching their numbers about the feasibility and the cost of changing the system, whatever, but we can still say these are two things that we favor. We don't have to pick one. If we want to pick one, we can. I know you'd been waiting a while, Jeffrey, so you go ahead. I told you had to wait till our vote was done, and our vote is done. and that fair was, had more positive feedback.
So I guess before we have any kind of formal vote, so my concerns with the flat fare is, while, I mean, I'm a fan of it, but I think with just the current stability that Metro's in, to recommend that is kind of, is assuming that people are willing to pay more for a flat fare. And I think with that being said, nobody's willing to pay more for Metro at this point. So to recommend a flat fare is saying, are you willing to pay $10 to get on Metro? Because Metro, I mean, it, we can recommend it, but the numbers that they're going to come out with are going to be, like, through the roof.
Yeah, it's in theory. It's a theory. So
while I think a flat fare is perfect, I think if we had to choose one of the four, in my opinion, I would probably pick the zone system, because if we're able to keep it in zones, neighborhoods, things of that nature, then that may make more sense for people who come out of town and don't necessarily understand the complexities of our system and the state that it's in financially, and knowing that jurisdictions are not willing to give more money, and we can't assume that they will, because no, they're not. So with that being said, I think recommending a flat fare at this point has a lot of really, really bad unintended consequences that I don't think a lot of riders are truly willing to accept at this current state.
Well, I think, for instance, if we have a lot of riders now to pay two something, and if we said, okay, we can have a flat fare, but it's going to be $3.50, and then you have, we have a mathematical sheet here that I think you'd have to explain.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, there also may be reasons we wouldn't be allowed to do that, because Title VI says that we cannot, with a fair change, differentially impact low income versus others. And if we find that it's the people who've been taking the short distances now have to pay so much more if they're low income, then we can't do it.
Aren't we already doing that?
Well, if they're out in the suburbs, you're right. But if they were inside, yeah, an area. Yeah, okay, so we have a lot of people that want to talk.
Can I make one more quick comment?
Sure.
One more quick comment, sorry. I think overall, whatever is done in the future, I think we need to think about ways to incentivize people to ride Metro. I think we need to think of other people or other businesses are finding ways to incentivize people to use their systems, whether it's an Uber, whether it's a Lyft.
Right.
So we have to figure out a way that we have a consistent fare system that incentivizes people, especially during events that we know a lot of people are going to want to take Metro but may not want to because of kind of the state it's in, to incentivize people to use Metro, whether it means reducing the fare a little bit and you make it up by more riders taking Metro. Metro has to really think and get creative on ways to incentivize people to use the rail, the bus, Metro access, whatever it is, rather than having these fare prices that just stick and they can't change for anything. So.
Okay, I'm happy to let all of you talk, but you know the consequences of this. If at 8:30 we don't have an agreement, we aren't leaving at 8:30. Okay. So who's had their. Make a circle, okay, Joe?
Yeah, so I'm totally for the fact that we have two variables, peak and distance. Like, I think one of them definitely has to go, and if anything, I would say at first, just to go into from what we have to what we want, we should either eliminate the peak or at least streamline it so that it's understandable. So anywhere from 6 to 9 and 3 to 6, that should be peak hours. If we're going to keep peak at all, I don't think we should. I think we should eliminate it. That should be eliminated, if at all. In terms of select pass, I don't think we need to actually even choose a fare that works for us or what we think will work for riders. If anything, we could borrow the innovation that we had from select pass and see that riders could pick their own fare structure. Like, what's a fair fare for the riders? And for some of them, it might be a flat fare. For some of them, it might be zone system.
Well, I don't think select pass works quite that way.
Yeah, I know it doesn't, but like building on that innovation, like if there were people that thought a flat fare would work for them better, if they could choose from the recommendation that we recommend in terms of what that flat fare would be if there was a flat fare structure, they could select that choice if they wanted to. That way, it would be open to all people. There wouldn't necessarily, I don't think, be any title restrictions with that since it's open to all. So they would essentially be choosing their own fare structure that works for them personally. I'm not sure if that necessarily works out. That's fine. Okay. But I would say that if we are going to choose a flat fare, it's going to essentially, I think, have to be an increase from what we have currently in order to help, or possibly. But then if that's the case, if we are going to increase flat fares, the fare in general, then I do think that we need to mix it in with something sweet, like getting rid of peak fares or getting rid of distance or getting something, rid of something so that the whole fare could be something more manageable and understandable. But if anything, we should get rid of the complexity and get rid of some of the
peak. All right. We're going around here, so we haven't heard from Debbie. So you get your turn now. But you still have to be fast.
On the peak fare idea and everything, what Jeffrey said is true as far as Metro is losing riders. That's something we've known. And we need to incentivize. And I think one of the reasons that I have heard the most is the whole peak fare thing. If we want to incentivize people to use Metro, we need to incentivize them during the time they're most likely to use it, which is peak time. And I think also the whole environmental impact and everything as trying to get people off the freeways into public transportation is going to be during peak time. And so I think that this last part here, you guys did a great job. I'm not complaining on this part. I'm just saying I think if we really think it through, the revenue impact of no change is that we will continue to lose revenue. Because we're losing revenue because of the
no
peak
change
fares.
In structure is not necessarily, it could be higher prices, but the same structure
or distance. I think the reason, one of the reasons, there's a lot of reasons. One of the reasons Metro is losing some riders is because the cost is more expensive during peak hours. So they're losing revenue to Uber or to people just driving their own car because, hey, for me, actually coming in the district during peak time, it was less expensive to take my car. If the peak fares, you know what I'm saying? So I think that there would be a revenue impact if they kept peak fares. They would just continue to lose revenue, I think.
Okay. Thaddeus.
Yes, I make that same judgment with driving versus, taking Metro. The one thing that throws me off with driving is having to park because that's like 12 to 15 bucks depending on. But as far as flat fares are concerned, using very oversimplified math, according to the website, you know, during peak fares, it's a minimum of $2.15 and a maximum of $5.90 for a trip. Using, of course, oversimplified math, that averages out to a $4 trip. Off-peak fares, the $1.75 minimum and a $3.60 maximum averages out to $2.65. So it's going to spread the pain around disproportionately. Nobody's going, to be really, really happy. Because in the morning, if I go from $2.15 to $4, I'm not going to be happy with that. But it's what's the alchemy behind that number is one of the difficult things to resolve.
One of the things that came up with Malcolm, he kind of implied when he was here last month, though, was that somebody will have to pay for the Metro. Even in theory, yes, you could give everybody a low flat fare. But if that means the revenue from what fares get now go way down, somebody somewhere is going to be paying that, and it's either Virginia, Maryland, or D.C., or all of them in some formula, but they're looking at where they're coming from, and then they're going to have to pick it up. And if it goes to the government, it may or may not hit the individuals that are actually – it'll hit everybody, not just the riders, but it will hit everybody. And the jurisdictions, unless they sign up to do that, would not permit us to do a low flat fare. So, but that doesn't, I'm not saying that means we can't do a flat fare, but it might not be a low, it might be like you said, it might be that up in that higher range and flat. And anyway, so Bob.
Yeah. I'm simply concerned that we're going to make a recommendation at this time on any of these options. Ridership has been dropping for the last 3 years, and this year it's dropped precipitously. That means revenue is dropping. I have no idea who is not using Metro that used to be using. Whether it's the short fare riders, the long fare riders, it's the rich, the poor. I don't know the answers to that. But to make a recommendation at this time seems to me for us. To make the recommendation at this time is ill-conceived. There's so much we don't know. I think when Metro returns to a more, also even after SafeTrack is completed, I have no idea, and I challenge anybody around here to have an idea of where ridership will go. One of the questions I was going to ask the general manager, but I already asked too many, was, what are the plans after SafeTrack is completed to get the riders back? There are a lot of reasons why we have lousy ridership. So I'm concerned that RAC's credibility is going to be somewhat questioned if we come out and say, this is what we think. Look, I live in Maryland. I'd love to have a $3 fare or a $4 fare. But, you know, I'm not sure if it's a good idea for the overall health of the system.
I understand your concern about us making a recommendation at this time, but we have an opportunity to give input before they come out with their proposal. We can just wait until after, but they've given us an opportunity to speak before the proposal is made. And we were told, you know, we're never going to make up for any revenue shortage that exists now. But they want to know the ideas that we think are good ideas from a rider perspective. And that's why I said I think we also don't have to say it's this one and this one alone. We can say these are the ones we like, because it could be, well, we really like the flat fare, but if they say, oh, yeah, but the only way we're going to, if they said the only way we can do it is if we have a $4 flat fare, then we say, okay, well, in that case, that's not the one we really want. But anyway, so we can say, no, thanks, we don't want to give input, but they've asked for input. We have said we would give them our input, so what our ideas are. And but, you know, we can give them these smaller ideas and ignore the whole structure thing if we want, but we have that opportunity. And if that's what the group votes, then that's what we'll do.
Is this just the one-shot opportunity? I mean,
yeah. No, this is the to get in. We always say we want to have input before they have it all thought out. This is our chance to do it before they put a proposal then out for public.
Are they seriously considering changing the fare structure in the short term?
It has come up many times, yes. Mr. Because it is starting, yeah, it starts. But it starts next July. Yeah, it's next July. Did you have something else you needed to say? I was afraid of that.
No. So just a couple of points. I think in our conversation that we've had in the Budget and Finance Committee, it's been like any of these proposals, the assumption if they're going into it that whatever the structure is, it would be at the baseline starting revenue neutral. So like it wouldn't. It's either bringing the same amount of money that the current structure does, but it's on the customer service end a little bit more user friendly versus something where in which it's like we're not trying to like make up for the deficit or something that's in there, because that's what Robert said, but something that everyone acknowledges the same. So whatever it would be to like extract the same amount of revenue, but it would be in a better service way. I am one of the number one proponents of zones. I think one of the things that we have to contend with is that unlike a lot of subway systems in the country, Metro does have these two hats, where it is, on one hand, a commuter rail for people just living out far and coming in, and then for other people who are in the city, using it to go meet up with their friends and go out at night. And that creates an interesting and difficult dynamic in terms of how do you build a schedule. Because in commuter rail systems, you do have peak fares. It is something that is designed in there for that purpose of, like, you want to get people not to use the service during that time because you cannot shut down the Metro at 10 o'clock in the morning. It has to keep running, and so you want to incentivize people to use it during that time, not during the time just to get to work. And so because Metro, the way it's designed, has to be a commuter rail for X amount of the population, and then a regular subway service for some other people, it has to meet this balance. And I think a lot of people have talked about, like, well, hey, what's the situation of you switching between zones? I think that there's an easy solution to that. We just have, like, a smaller surcharge in terms of what it costs, whatever it means if you're going from Virginia to DC on the yellow, it's just a 25 cents for switching over to zones, but you still maintain whatever your base zone structure was in there. I do think something else that we isn't here to talk about is the idea of moving to passes a little bit more, which is a big thing again.
everyone in New York has...
Which we will get to that.
Yeah,
so I'd like to keep this to the structure.
To the structure, but I think that is something that we have to sort of think about as sort of like if it is built in there that this is what you're using and it is something
where... it's a good point that the structure doesn't matter as much if you're on a pass. Although the passes right now are based on the distance price.
Exactly, but if you have like a flat, like this is what it is, this is the cost, is, like you don't care what you're going into. Like I'm just, and you know buying a pass is cheaper than buying each individual trip every day. And that's just like the way you're using it as your daily commuting system in there.
Can we go on? Christine.
Thank you. At this point, I probably am going to reiterate a few things, but I wanted to make my points, and I wanted to stress the recommendation and the concern I have with making a recommendation right now. For one, definitely appreciate the work here. I think a great idea is potentially to provide this information. There's not a one-size-fits-all, and we need to consider some things that were mentioned. How are we going to gain ridership and then spread out the usage, avoid the crowding situations? I think those are two very key points when thinking about this. As you go farther out, you have the potential limited income riders where there's more affordable housing. The people closer in may not mind paying a little more. However, with that flat fare, I have a concern because the people living closer who may have to pay more to ride on Metro, are then we compete with taxis, Uber, and those other types of transportation, where if I have to pay more, why would I sit around and wait for a bus and then wait for a Metro to get to my point when I could pay the same or less by using some other means of transportation? So in order to make a informed recommendation in project management and process improvement, I mean, the first things you need to do are data collection and analysis. So surveying the riders that are out there and creating something that's not necessarily one size fits all is potentially what we need to do to reach out to gaining ridership and helping with this decision.
Okay. James. We don't want to know right now about those other cities.
Well, that was kind of my concern I share with Bob, that I felt like there was too little information as far as the actual impacts of this, because to me, one of the things about policy is that you should be aware of what you wish for. And particularly my concern with the flat fare thing is until there is a calculation that says how much that flat fare is going to be, particularly because WMATA or Metro has one of the highest self-support ratios in the country. And New York City gets a far larger federal subsidy, as I'm aware, than D.C. does. And so, as you pointed out, other places have dedicated revenue sources, other kinds of cushions that D.C. unfortunately does not have. And so a flat fare could be penalizing to inner city people who are traveling short distances. Smart Growth America says 50% of trips in this country are 3 miles or less, and 28% of trips are 1 mile or less.
So you want to see more of the math.
Right.
Well, we thought we needed to do that up front. And when we met originally with the planning and the finance guy, they said, you know, we wanted them to tell us the numbers associated with all these ideas. And they said, we want your ideas. We don't have to, you know, they would do the numbers and tweak it 25 different ways to see how it would work if they tried to do it. They asked us not to put the numbers to it because they want to know from a rider perspective, what do the riders want?
We can't do the math here.
No.
Yeah, we can't do the math.
We can't do it.
It's right. Too much.
Too complicated. They have a staff to do that.
Right.
And so we thought, great, well, that's so we want to talk about what we want. But that's why, you know, if we have a couple of choices, they might say, and we have a deadline to do that. It's like in the next week or two.
I understand. But again, it's very difficult lacking that information to say, are we setting ourselves up to, like, $7 fares for everybody?
No, but I think we can say that. We might, for instance, we could say we like the idea of the flat fare, but if it's something that's going to be a significant increase for the lowest paying ones, then no, we don't want it.
Yeah.
You know, we can say things like that.
Can I go back to the
we say that all these are good ideas? These are all things that
we can. If we do, yes, that's absolutely true. These are ideas that we think have merit.
That's right.
I think we've made a round once.
I don't have a comment. I just want to. What are we? Are we going to vote to see which one
we
want
to
keep?
I'm only to take input from some people that would like to provide input on the process because it is 8:10. Colin, why don't you?
I think process-wise, what we might want to do is simply identify the things that we would like to see explored by staff, sure, rather than say these are definitively the things that the RAC thinks should happen.
Because I agree. Even if we wanted to say, though, that the thing we has the most interest is, for instance, if it is flatware. We had more hands go up about flatware.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's right. So I think if you want to prioritize it, that's fine. But I don't think we're going to get to a point tonight, given the lack of information, where we can really say, this is what the RAC wants. But I do think this underscores sort of the silo that we continuously find ourselves in, where staff and the board are making decisions, asking our input, but not actually involving us in the process.
It's ideas.
Yeah.
They wanted ideas. They weren't saying, yeah. So maybe I shouldn't call it recommendations.
Yeah, yeah.
They want our ideas.
I think that's true.
These are the ideas that we recommend you explore.
Yes.
These have merit from a writer.
I would say that accompanying our proposed ideas should be a request that we be more intimately involved in the process moving forward.
Well, they are definitely, they're going to be working with the board and, taking input from us and AAC, and then they're going to put something together based on the guidance they get from the board. And then it'll be, and they absolutely want our proposal. And that's where we usually want our feedback on that proposal. And that is usually where we've come in the past, is that they have it all laid out. But as you know, something always changes and that they do end up dropping something or adding something. And so I like your idea what I would just like, is there any of these ideas that we would like to not move forward and not even put on the list of things we'd like to see? Because we had I just would like to take a show of hands again. I know that might be, but I'm going to do it fast. Okay, you get one. Get two votes. What? That's a separate, this is structure.
But then I can't isolate it between fair structure unless, because they're not in silos, you can't necessarily.
Those are fair levels, not fair structure. Well, okay, I understand your point, but. All right, now everyone, please, you have two votes, two exercise. You can raise your hand twice out of these four. If you choose to do one, I'm not, we're not auditing. But how many will take one of your two votes and put it on no change?
What's the outcome of this?
I want to see if there's an idea that we don't even want to give to them.
You want to eliminate one?
Yes. If we want to eliminate one. I'm just asking, after we've had all this and people have talked about these opinions, do we still have the same vote we had? If you think we do, then we'll just take them all.
I'm not sure if anybody knows really what the implications of any of these truly are.
Okay, but the issue is not that we're going to recommend. The issue is that we're going to propose.
And get more.
I think that it's a better word if you use propose.
Propose.
Right.
But I mean, I share Bob's concerns in terms of now may not be the best time to necessarily hike fares unless we offset that with a positive outcome. Like, if anything, if we think peak fares, I don't know if any of us could raise our hands and say, when are the peak hours?
Anything about raising. But
I'm just saying, if anything, can we, if we're not going to eliminate peak hours or streamline them so that we could all know exactly when they are, because I could say, a member of the public, he or she may not know when these peak hours are. If anything, can we just get rid of them just for the weekend when people aren't going to work? Because when they're going to these various destinations, that might be something worth considering. And then if that works out during the work, when they're not going to work, it might be worth scaling to the rest of the week, but.
There is no peak.
Yeah, well, no, there are, oh yeah, peak, yeah, there are.
No, there's no peak on the week. I thought so too, but okay, let me put it this way.
7 a.m. to midnight.
Yeah, and we are, and keep in mind, we're making, they want our ideas, we're not doing the math, we're not doing the science behind it, it's just, you know, for one, is there something that we just should not put forward at all? But rather or not, it will work and is grounded in reality, they're going to do the math behind it. So that's, I don't know.
And they're also just going to put their own opinion.
Right, I don't know how far we should get off into the weeds because we're just putting forth ideas.
That's right.
How about like an options memo?
What I'm going to do right now is, okay, what I'm going to do, unless somebody puts a motion out that people agree to, is I'm going to put all four of these ideas forward.
Yeah.
Now, does somebody have a motion to do anything different? Christine.
I am great with that. However, I mean, in all fairness, we've only just received this information. I think I would like to take that one step further, have the opportunity to provide some feedback, such as, for example, the flat fare under revenue impact, that we're going to create competition. I think we need a chance to provide our feedback to what's on here. This is great work, but to just...
But
send it in the way it is,
We gave this to everybody last month.
A month.
And you've had it a month.
Sorry, I was absent.
But we sent it out, and this is just ideas. This is not decisions. We don't need to figure out the numbers for whether this is changes revenue.
Such a big...
Okay.
The motion is that the RAC votes on, of the four proposals, drops one, and then the direction to the staff is to then go forward and conduct essentially an impact study and report back to the RAC on what, if we were to move to each of those models, whichever of the three to propose, what it would look like. So what the fare structure would be like if we go flat fare, what it would look like, base fare, what are the...
I don't know that we can ask for them to run the numbers on all four because they are going to also add to this pool what they think. And, you know, at one time, for instance, I don't know what it is now, but at one time, Jack was Adam. He wanted a flat fare structure, okay? And maybe he still feels that way. And so he may not be willing to entertain the others. I don't know that. So I don't think we can ask that something that they hate, you know, if there's one they hate or love.
We're going on such a wholesale change. How about if we do, like, flat Fridays, where every Friday is a flat Friday?
Or, you know, like, I don't know. It just seems like... It just seems like it's such a huge change at such a really unstable time. I'm just saying, like, get rid of peak hour, peak fares during Fridays.
Can we vote?
Maybe once and scale that.
Okay, we have now moved to chaos.
Order
in the court. Order in the room. All right. I am going to not recommend these four, but I am going to say the RAC members think there is merit in considering all four of these as an approach, not knowing, you know, that they may already know going in one of them is nightmare, whatever. So I'm going to do that unless somebody has a motion to do something different. So
I have a motion.
You have a motion. Colin.
I move to remove no change from the list that we put forward.
I agree.
All in favor of removing no change, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstaining?
The ayes have it.
Okay, the ayes do have it. And I think even if we don't put it on the list, they can say that, yeah, that the system expenses right
now. They're probably looking at that.
They already know the no change. So they want new ideas.
Yeah, these are ideas.
Why do we
fine.
Need
okay.
Change?
Now.
Are you indicating, are we going to indicate that is our view, that no change is not something we should throw out? It's just that.
Well,
the
it's
other
implied.
Four
it, does
it's
not, it does not move forward on this list.
Right,
we
for
won't tell them.
Ideas.
We're going to give them these different ideas, not just the no change. Well, that's what we just voted on, though, and we had a vote. So we had a vote. It was a fair vote. So that passed.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at you and you're looking at me. Okay.
You can put that on me.
No. But no, the majority here agreed with you. So that we're just saying here are our ideas. They're still going to consider no change. It's not something we're going
to. At the end of the day, like, let's be honest with ourselves, we're not the ones making the decision.
Right, but we can say that they looked for ideas, and we think these should be explored. We aren't saying don't ever consider keeping what we have. We didn't say that. We're just. Okay.
I think to take what Bob's taking and what all y'all are saying, just to, if I'm hearing this right, we can't make a recommendation because we do not have the tools and
the
knowledge.
But we're not.
We shouldn't even make a proposal. We should say, you've asked for our ideas. Here are our ideas, knowing that we don't have full knowledge to make an informed.
And that is.
Because we have to make sure, because Bob's right. We're not going to look credible if we say things and they know that they don't have any backup.
Right. No, we'll make those caveats very clear that we were told not to consider.
So ideas that we don't have ability to substantiate is I think, what we need to make sure.
Okay.
I do want to say, I want to make sure that whoever is going to evaluate these ideas, compare and contrast all of them, not including no change, because ultimately it's going to be the revenue impact of all of these ideas and how it affects different segments in different jurisdictions. That's going to be. And if you eliminate, in our recommendation, no change, it may be interpreted that no change should not be included in comparing and contrasting.
No, they would always do that. They would always compare any proposal.
Well, then I don't see why we wouldn't say that.
Because we already voted not to say that.
Okay. All right.
Trust us. No, we're going to say these are ideas that we have for changes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. Trust us. We're going to end.
Trust us.
No.
Metro's been saying trust us.
I'm not saying trust. I'm saying trust seats and me, that we will make those statements, that these are the ideas. Okay, all right. I'm going to move on. We have, it is 8:22, just reminding you, so I'm going to keep going. Until
Barbara, I have a motion.
You have another motion?
Yes, I move that we share the idea of eliminating peak hours, fares, and when we talk about fare levels, that be the idea that we put forward.
Right. We as it stands, what we put in here is we had a lot of, we did the survey. We did not have lots of response, but the people who did respond overwhelmingly said, don't eliminate peak, but do make the hours shorter because it wasn't realistically peak. And that doesn't mean this group can't overturn that, but that's what we have. So we can discuss that as little as you
there's
have.
There's a motion on the table.
Allow. How many people? Okay, so there's what it sounds like is there's three options. You know, you just keep peak the way it is, which one is get rid of the concept of peak versus shorten the peak. Now, how, okay.
As it has not been seconded, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to that motion.
Okay, because your motion was to just go with the other one, eliminate peak.
Right.
Okay. Fine.
Well, given the time, what I would propose is that we vote to move these ideas forward as a block, unless
the peak ones or everything.
Everything.
Well, no, you can't. But some of them are mutually exclusive. Well, I mean, the elimination
Which
of peak
ones?
Right now was not a recommendation. It was. Just,
I see.
That we could make it. We could say we think you should either eliminate them or reduce. Oh yeah, we could do that. Just like, you know.
So perhaps beyond, you know, I withdraw my amendment.
That's friendly. Okay. So there's move. Did somebody second? Somebody did second. Second the motion that we support or that we favor elimination of peak differential. Any additional discussion?
I don't know if I'm the only one that remembers. I've been living on and off since 1980. And at the beginning, peak, the difference, rush and non-rush, in rush hour, it was cheaper because they wanted everybody to ride Metro. It was the incentive was, in rush hour, it was cheaper to ride Metro. Then that changed when they started having all the budget problems. But if we're talking about doing incentives, maybe should we go back to that? The rush hour is cheaper?
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? We have the motion on the floor. Do we really need to discuss, or can we try voting? I'm just asking.
Can you restate the motion?
The motion was to was that we support the elimination of peak differential.
At least the studying of it, not necessarily.
Well, yeah, that we think that's a good idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's our idea, is to eliminate.
Or you can streamline it, or do it elimination for one day or more days.
On Fridays. Yeah. Flat Friday. Peak Friday.
I mean, whatever you want to do. For
okay. All right. I can. You're the person that knows the.
Motion to end discussion.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Second. Is that calling for the question, too?
Yes.
Yes, okay. All those in favor of support the elimination of the peak versus off-peak differential, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Opposed? Abstaining? Okay, well, the ayes carry it. Okay, so we're going to switch the pink. Oh, well, this is not what we're giving them. We're giving them something, you know, that's words, not charts. Okay, thank you. Passes. This is toward the direction of tourist ridership, short-term visitors, and so forth, is to add a 2 or 3 day pass. There's just now a 1 and a 7, and I think a lot of tourists come for a short time, not 7 full days, but we don't know. It would be to explore that. I don't think this is particularly controversial. I'd like to move that we suggest that to explore that. Any second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Well, this is getting better. Thank you. Okay. You know, so I think we want to, the refunds, okay, let me just try this, see if it works. I move that we once again put forward, even though it was turned down before, that we establish a refund policy. We aren't saying specifically what it is. We're saying that it be concrete, and rather than, we know case by case is the chosen way. That's what we meant. Yeah, this was shorthand. We had something. It was an adjustment.
Not to refer to as a refund, but like a service guarantee. So they're saying like this is a minimum service expectation that WMATA has, and if your situation meets that criteria, then you're.
So I think that would be. I mean that's like part. That would be a component of the policy, right?
Yeah.
Well, we weren't specifying that it be anything specific as much as it just be formalized,
right,
so it could be consistent.
I
so that's kind of what
so
that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, a standard.
Yeah, a standard.
Which, yeah.
Okay. So we think that's part of the same thing. I'm just going to skip discussion at this point unless somebody stops me. So all those in favor of this establishing a refund policy, which the short guaranteed service. Aye, say aye.
Aye.
Oh, the refund policy. It's the same thing we suggested before, only we added this service guarantee concept. Opposed? Thank you.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. They might tell us no again, but you know. Now, this late night service, so we've had What we did not say keep it exactly as it is today. This is one. Well, it's maybe what we've talked about in general is we're saying, you know, look at when the ridership's the highest in those late night hours, like maybe not till 3, but maybe to 1 or something, and or maybe look at where it's really used, whether it's the core downtown or if it goes out a little, you know. We realize that doesn't help all the workers that are commuting a long ways. We're just saying look at the numbers and see if you can still get what you want done by shutting down, you know, some places or it's, you know, longer than you do now. So I'm moving that we recommend that. Is there anybody to second? And then James really wants to talk about it. Do you want to talk about it even if we vote and we all agree?
Well, I was concerned about the option here, kind of either or in terms of this, whether or not there's a possibility to do like do it now to save the track of having like that sort of single track. So they have extended times to work, but it's on one track at a time, so you're still providing some service.
So that's a friendly amendment if you sort of.
Well, I guess I'm asking, is that a possibility?
I think that's a great idea. Well, because, see, I kept thinking, why cut back all the time? Why not still do it on these, just on certain times, you know? I don't know. Maybe people just hate the unpredictability of that. I don't know. So
also maybe the economics that they don't have the system open, so that's
well, and again, this is, again, explore. We would like you to see if we can explore, and we can add that to it, or doing it on a more targeted or a single tracking, right?
And you could maybe implement the single tracking at say either 9 or 10 p.m. so that they have a
which is what they do now during the week sometimes. Yeah, tonight is one of them.
Barbara.
Okay,
Barbara.
So I am happy to accept that as a friendly amendment, and so it's been moved and seconded. Well, do I have a second? Do I need a second
just,
because of the
just thing? For clarification, are we adding that as a second option under
no,
late
I don't
service?
Think so. I think it's part of the, we're saying, you know, look for where.
I guess edit the.
Yeah, it's either where the ridership is high or the segments where it's high or look at just safe doing a single tracking instead of
right,
full
that sounds
shutting.
Like distinct options to me.
Do you think so?
Yes, but I mean, I could be wrong.
I think we're saying, let's. It's
what's
kind of like let's
I
get
had?
The bang for the buck, you know, where if there's no ridership 2 to 3, but there's a ton of it from 12 to 1. Do the
yes,
three.
I understand that, but that's distinct from doing single tracking or doing.
Well, what it's saying is less frequent.
Safe track-esque line shutdowns.
Yeah, okay. So you want to split that out. Okay, do you want to leave these two together, though, the segments and the times?
Yeah, I would.
Those
I,
are okay
I would,
together.
I would,
okay,
I would
so then ask, then I'll, then I'm going to, can I unaccept his friendly amendment? Okay, so can we vote on then just as it reads? Than originally read that we look at the where the ones where it's most critical to keep it. All those in favor of that idea?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstention? Okay, so the safe you're saying now instead at late night look at single tracking for late nights. Then the frequency would be, you know, poor, but that it'd still be service. It'd be longer. It's more it's longer headways at night.
You know, I was thinking about that,
but that's
the only reason why I'm thinking that they might not want to do that because it takes a long time to clear the people from the system as it is, late night as it is, so they may not want to be with the single track and it's going to take longer to clear all the trains and people out of the system, so.
And it's still possible to keep it open.
Right.
So,
yeah, because I mean, the system, especially downtown, generally, well, as it gets extended out, can stay open to 1, sometimes 1:30 at night after the midnight cutoff. So, you know, single tracking, unless they can figure out the numbers of how many trains to get through to keep it, you know, shorter. It depends on what they need to do in the tunnel, so. Right. Yeah, because sometimes they have to shut the entire track bed down on both sides. Oh, no, I understand.
Yeah, I see no harm in putting the idea forth.
No, I agree with you.
Okay, I don't know. I had a side conversation, shame on me. And can we put... Thank you.
We look at the return of late night service with the option of single tracking to increase the power.
Right. If that, yeah, just look at the feasibility of that. Second. All right. All in favor? Aye. Nay. Okay. Abstain. Okay. I know I'm really. Second.
I move that we eliminate the blue line. Put all the new trains on the red line.
Let me show you this report. I brought it with me
just
tonight.
Just kidding. I'm sorry.
There. See the reds? That's the blue line.
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor that we add... recommend strong consideration of evaluation and balancing. Okay, all in favor of that? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Thank you.
So once again, I would like to motion that unless there is opposition to a distinct idea already highlighted for the remaining ideas, that we vote on them as a block.
Sure. The bus? What, like the whole page?
Everything remaining.
Well, one thing, if I can, I have to leave. I have to catch a ride. So real quick, just back to the, on the second page that we haven't gotten to, and I hear where he's coming from, but that was the page I had the most concern about.
Sure.
With our, so we've all, I think, agreed we're not going to recommend, we're going to put forward ideas. But we have to be careful, too, that when we say why or why not or potential impact, we're not qualified to do that. We don't have the numbers. We don't have, so we have to say, here's an idea. What do you guys think?
Because I'm not
right
sure we're going
to
put that at all. No,
I'm
planning on putting the ideas. This
right.
was for our own discussion and what
right.
we thought.
Right, but when it
I
says revenue
stand up
would
on
be
a podium
worse,
and say
we don't
know
if it's
true.
Bad to begin. You
no.
know what I'm saying?
Great.
So I just wanted to you know, and the only other thing is the parking. Nothing's mentioned about reducing. We've got no change or senior disabled refunds, but nothing about reducing the parking, you know, so it says no change, but what about keeping parking and reducing it? Because I know a lot of my friends, that nips it in the bud for them, that they have to pay for parking and the train to get in. But that's not listed.
That's not an idea either.
Yeah, so that was just an idea. So thank
okay.
you.
All right. I was hoping, yeah, we would do whole pages at one time before we got here and didn't work out. Anyway. But now, and are you saying then, let me clarify, that you're saying that all the pink things we're going to put forward, and which includes increasing transfer window, bus-only select pass longer than 7 day, the express pass is kind of, I don't know much about that, higher discounts for transfers and the grace period on parking. Okay, but we've heard a motion. Was there a second? Seconded it. Okay, and you want to have discussion?
I want to say a bus only is a bus pass. It's a bus with a fat fare, which only time I a bus pass.
You know, because it's a flat fare, they'd all be the same, wouldn't
yeah.
they?
To just change the language, I can say, like, one of the bus passes. And one of the bus passes.
There's a weekly, original monthly bus pass for our
yeah, and the weekly pass.
So it's not really a select pass, it's just a monthly pass, a monthly bus pass. Isn't there a monthly bus pass?
There's only a 7 day bus pass, but there's no monthly version of that. But that bus pass allows you to ride on Metro Bus.
It's unlimited.
Yeah, it's unlimited. But the thing is, there's no monthly, strictly bus pass.
Right.
There's no express, like, I'm not sure what.
Right.
So we can get rid of the 7-day longer express buses.
But it'd probably be based on the select pass philosophy in that we'd like do 18 times or something like that.
I accept that amendment.
Yeah. Okay.
That friendly amendment.
All right. So do we have to vote on a friendly amendment? Or that's...
This is where my knowledge of Robert's rules...
Yeah, I know. Okay. Well, I think we violated every rule that we passed anyway.
Oh, absolutely. We're terrible.
Fez, are you putting that in the paper? Please don't. okay, so we have a motion and a second to accept all the pink ones with the exception of where we're going to change the minor change in the wording from select pass to monthly on bus only. And all in favor? Aye. Opposed? And abstain. Now, we didn't have the pink was not what Deborah was putting forward, but she didn't make a motion, but she expressed an interest in that. Does anybody want to add the let's reduce the bus price?
Parking.
She suggested it before she left.
I would see that, and again, without putting any background knowledge, as a really strong way of enticing more riders who usually drive to the metro.
My comment would be, we have stations that fill up instantly in the morning.
There's not enough space.
There's just no space. I mean, if you look at there, it's 6:30 to East Falls Church or 6 o'clock. You can't park there. And there are some lots where, yeah, Huntington could take so many more. So we could make a suggestion that it be, one option would be to make it more demand-oriented.
More what?
Demand-oriented, where, you know, we could have higher prices where people are fighting over this. But I don't know, that would that be considered, you know, parasitic?
That's right. Once the lot is full, it's full. I mean, if I work as an average 9-5 person, you're not leaving at 12.
Yeah, I know that Vienna, I think that if you go after 7, you've got no parking.
Most of Virginia, yeah. Orange Line, you can't park after a certain time.
It doesn't matter what time you work.
Yeah. Who wants... Who has a proposal? Do we already have a motion?
Is there a motion?
I don't think there was.
I don't think so.
Do we have a motion? Is there a motion from anybody that you feel?
Parking. No? No.
Other than the grace that we already put in here. Okay.
Moving on.
Fine.
So will we have an opportunity to review the letter before it?
I'm happy to do that.
What I can do is I can consolidate.
What our plan is, we have a budget meeting tomorrow night.
Oh, okay.
And that's our objective, is to do this and take it from where we said to what we put on paper, or at least to sign out who's going to write what. And I don't have any problem at all. I think it's all totally fair that we do that.
By what time? In fairness to UNC, so by what time does somebody who wants to say something need to say it?
But you're saying you want to react to what we give you.
Right.
He wants to react.
Okay.
So I have to find out.
So I would say just, oh, you mean like what's the deadline for us to get this to the board?
No.
We're going to not only give, we're going to give the ideas to the board and to the people who were the people who started us on this, the finance. It's Sham and Mark.
Clarifying.
So you guys you're giving this to the, you're delivering this tomorrow night, right?
No, no. Oh, no, no, we're right. We're going to work on it. We're going to take it from where it is to there. And then we may write it tomorrow night, but we may say, okay, I'm going to write this piece.
But,
and yeah, you can always come to the meeting.
Yep.
Or you can call. We'll let you call in tomorrow night.
No, but,
sure.
I just,
And everything, we will make sure that everybody gets.
And we'll try to remember the caveats, but I want to give whoever wants it, so we'll send it to all of you, so you have an opportunity to say, I hated the wording of this, I think you need to add that, whatever, that's fine.
After the,
and you'll get two comments.
Yes, after the budget committee meeting, so, yeah, either
add
or,
people will be very strong about them.
So, once again, we have successfully prevented any roundtable discussion about your ideas. Okay, back to order. I gave no opportunity for any other committee chair to have a statement of their stuff. Don't know if you have anything you need to.
So, I mean, I would just say very quickly, I sent out to all of you a brief little survey about your interests in helping with the social media efforts. If you haven't responded to that, please do. And that's.
Did you get responses? Okay. Thank you. Christine?
I just have a save the date for the next emergency, quarterly emergency drill. I was told it's November 6th.
At?
I don't know the location. I know the save the date. Save the date. November 6th.
Leadership
if
and governance.
If that changes, I will let you know, but that's what I was told at the. It's always at 6 a.m.
And thank you. Everybody who was at the last drill, raise your hand. We had a fantastic turnout. We had about as many people as we had at our last monthly meeting. We had press about everybody. We had pictures, videos.
He was in the Washington Post.
Yes.
He was in this guy was in the Washington Post.
Oh, yeah. And Cease and I were both on TV on Channel 9, and there was a huge article. Was it also in the Post about Jamie? And was she? Yeah. Yeah, most of us did. Yeah.
I will.
I think Will and. Will, do you have an announcement that you need to make from your group?
Tomorrow night, right?
And a leadership and governance announcement is, please do note, if you are part of the Budget and Finance or the Customer Service Committee, it is tomorrow night, which is the second Thursday, which is when you always meet, even though it's usually a week after this meeting, it's tomorrow night, this month. We can always use the standard dial-in number that we have. So, anything else? Okay.
I move we adjourn.
Second. hearing no objection, we're adjourned. Thank you.